Imagine holding a solid bar of pure tin in your hands. You grab it and you bend it sharply in half.
Right.
And instead of a dull metallic thud, the metal actually emits this distinct high-pitched scream.
Yeah, it literally cries out.
It does. Or picture taking a completely crushed, mangled piece of wire, dropping it into a glass of hot water, and just watching it instantly untwist itself.
Like magic.
Exactly, returning to a perfectly straight line as if it literally remembered its original shape.
It sounds like pure science fiction, honestly. I mean, we're so used to thinking of solid metal as this dead, unchanging, stubborn material.
Right, just a dumb block of steel.
Yeah, exactly. But inside, down at the atomic level, there is this hyperactive, highly coordinated architecture that is constantly reacting to its environment.
And that is exactly our mission for today's deep dive. We are exploring the secret microscopic life of solid-state metals. And for you, the listener, we've pulled together an incredibly dense stack of metallurgy research.
It's a lot of material.
It really is. We're synthesizing university lecture notes on the mechanisms of twins and martensite. We've got granular research papers on annealing twins and detailed microscopic analyses of austenitic stainless steel.
Which is such a fascinating collection of work because it completely challenges our basic assumptions about how solids behave.
Right.
We're going to distill exactly how atoms move, how they shear and reorganize themselves when a metal is stressed or heated or cooled. We'll explore, displacive movements, twinning, and the actual mechanics behind that seemingly magical shape memory you mentioned.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we can understand how a metal remembers its shape, we have to look at how it builds its internal structure in the first place, right?
Right, the basic building blocks.
Yeah, and what happens when that structure encounters a microscopic mirror?
So to visualize this, you really have to realize that if you look at a piece of, say, copper or nickel under a microscope, it's not just one continuous uniform block.
It's not just a smooth sheet.
No, not at all. It is a mosaic. It's made up of millions of tiny microscopic crystals, which we call grains. And inside every single one of those grains, the atoms are stacked in a highly specific, repeating geometric pattern.
So, imagine packing oranges into a crate as tightly as possible. You lay down a bottom layer, right?
Yep.
Then you nestle the second layer into the gaps of the first layer and the third layer into the gaps of the second. In cubic closed-packed metals, this specific stacking sequence goes A, then B, then C, and repeats. A, B, C, A, B, C.
Exactly. It's perfectly ordered.
But occasionally that pattern does something completely bizarre. It twins.
Yes, twinned grains. So a twin occurs when the arrangement of atoms in one section of the grain becomes an exact, perfect geometric mirror reflection of the atoms in the adjacent section.
Mapped across a shared boundary.
Right.
So if I try to picture this using an analogy, imagine watching a mason lay a brick wall. They are laying the bricks in a standard repeating pattern, moving left to right.
Like they normally would.
Right. And suddenly, without any warning or change in materials, the next section of the wall they build becomes a perfect mirror reflection of the previous section. The orientation simply flips backwards.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening at the atomic level.
But I mean, does a structural flip like that make the metal inherently weaker? It sounds like a severe vulnerability, like the wall would just fall over.
That's a very natural assumption, but the brick wall analogy kind of only gives us half the picture.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because in a macroscopic wall, suddenly reversing the pattern usually creates a weak, unstable joint. But in metallurgy, we have to look at the thermodynamics. What's fascinating here is that this mirror boundary is actually incredibly stable.
Stable. Wait, how could a structural flip be stable?
It comes down to energy. In these metals, the mirror reflection happens parallel to what crystallographers call the 111 planes. The stacking sequence hits a central B layer, and instead of continuing to C,
Like the ABC pattern from earlier.
right, instead of going to C, it reflects backward. So it goes ABCABACBO.
Oh, wow. So it just reverses itself completely.
Yes. That central B layer acts as the mirror. And because the crystal structures on both sides are completely identical, they're simply occupying different orientations, they fit together with absolute mathematical precision.
Okay, so they lock in perfectly.
Exactly. This creates an extremely low energy per unit area. It is a coherent boundary that requires almost no extra thermodynamic energy to maintain, so it doesn't create a weak point at all.
It just stitches itself together seamlessly. But why do the atoms suddenly decide to flip and create these twins in the first place? I mean, what causes the mirror?
Well, the physics behind their birth actually tells two completely different stories. There is a story of intense trauma and a story of basically architectural healing.
The smashed and the baked.
Precisely. Let's start with the smashed. Mechanical twinning.
Okay.
This does not happen peacefully. It happens when a grain of metal is subjected to sudden, massive deformation. You strike it, you bend it, you crush it.
The atoms are essentially forced to move. They undergo a coordinated shear. The stress is so immense that entire planes of atoms slide past each other in perfect lockstep.
Yeah, and they do this at a highly specific mathematical ratio, a twinning shear of 1 over the square root of 2.
Which is incredibly specific.
Right, and we shouldn't gloss over that number. 1 over the square root of 2 isn't random. It is the precise geometric magnitude required in a close-packed atomic lattice to shift the planes into a mirror orientation without the atoms violently colliding into each other.
Oh, I see.
It's the only path of geometric survival when the metal is being actively crushed.
But surviving that crush comes at a cost. Right, because mechanical twins carry massive amounts of strain energy. They are physically tense, trapped in a lattice that is basically screaming to relieve the pressure.
Which dictates their physical shape. Because they are holding onto so much internal elastic strain, they can't just be flat or square. They have to adopt a lenticular shape.
Lenticular meaning like a lens.
Yes, thick in the middle, but tapering off into very sharp, pointed ends. Those needle-like tips are thermodynamically necessary to gradually dissipate the intense elastic strain tearing through the surrounding metal.
They form these sharp, jagged needles to avoid ripping the metal apart entirely.
Exactly, and they do this incredibly fast.
Like how fast?
Sometimes at the speed of sound inside the metal.
Wow, which brings us back to that screaming tin I mentioned at the start of the deep dive.
Right, the cry of tin. When you bend a bar of pure tin or indium, you are initiating the rapid supersonic creation of millions of these pointed mechanical twins all at once.
And that violent atomic shear creates an acoustic shockwave.
Exactly. The metal literally emits a high-pitched audible sound.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because if mechanical twins are the result of violent screaming trauma, the second kind of twin, the annealing twin, forms without any stress at all.
None whatsoever. Annealing twins were actually observed in gold way back in 1897 by a scientist named Liversidge.
Oh, wow. That long ago.
Yeah. And these form when a deformed metal is heated or annealed and allowed to recrystallize. It grows completely new, healthy grains.
So if there's no stress, why do they mirror themselves?
Yeah.
The literature calls these growth accidents, right?
Right. As the new grain is growing atom by atom in the heat, the sequence just accidentally slips into that mirror orientation.
So it's just a mistake.
Pretty much. And because it's an accident during peaceful growth, there is no massive elastic strain energy to manage.
So without that strain, they don't need to form those sharp, pointed, needle-like ends to survive.
Exactly. Their shape is governed purely by the need to minimize their surface area, their interfacial energy.
So they go perfectly flat, blunt ends, parallel bands running smoothly across the grain. You can see beautiful microscopic images of these flat annealing twins inside advanced power generation materials, like NF709 stainless steel.
They're visually quite striking under a microscope.
And, you know, thinking about this highly coordinated rhythmic assembly of atoms actually reminds me of a brilliant detail buried in the Cambridge Research Group's notes.
Oh, are you talking about Yixin Cheng?
Yes. She's a researcher at National Taiwan University who studies these exact microscopic annealing twins in steel. But she is also an accomplished flamenco dancer.
Which is amazing.
It's just such a poetic overlap. Someone mastering rhythmic, complex choreography at the macroscopic human scale while studying the exact same kind of coordinated rhythmic movement of atoms under a microscope.
It is a wonderful parallel. And the atomic choreography she studies is dictated by something called stacking fault energy.
Stacking fault energy. Let's get into that.
So we called these twins growth accidents. Well, stacking fault energy is essentially the penalty a metal pays for making an atomic mistake.
Hi.
If a metal has a low stacking fault energy, the penalty is cheap. The atoms are forgiving, so you get lots of these flat annealing twins.
Low penalty equals more mirror image accidents.
Generally, yes. but nature always has an exception.
Of course it does.
Nickel has a notoriously high stacking fault energy. It penalizes atomic mistakes severely. So by all conventional logic, it shouldn't form annealing twins easily at all.
Right, because the penalty is too high.
Yet when you look at recrystallized nickel, it is packed with them.
Really?
Yeah, it tells us that our growth accident hypothesis is kind of incomplete, and that deeper thermodynamic driving forces can override the basic rules of stacking fault energy.
Okay, so we've seen atoms shear at supersonic speeds to form sharp twins and accidentally mirror themselves during heating to form flat twins. But what happens when an entire phase of a metal deforms into a completely new crystal structure without a single atom actually trading places with its neighbor?
Oh, now we are stepping into the profound territory of Martensitic transformations.
This concept is incredibly counterintuitive because these transformations are displacive, meaning they're diffusionless.
Mm.
The atoms don't heat up, break their bonds, wander around, and settle into a new lattice. They do not migrate.
That's right. In a displacive transformation, there is a synchronized deformation. Every single atom moves, but no atom ever passes its neighbor. They maintain their exact relative relationships.
Let me try a different analogy for you here. Imagine a massive military marching band standing on a football field in a giant square formation.
Okay, a square.
The music shifts, and they need to transform into a diamond formation. But the strict rule is nobody is allowed to break rank, and nobody's allowed to walk past the person next to them.
That sounds impossible.
Right. But to make the diamond, every single person simply shifts a half step to the left and a quarter step forward simultaneously in perfect lockstep. The overall structure changes, but everyone's neighbors stay exactly the same.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that synchronized lockstep shift is the essence of a displacive transformation. Now, sometimes this military march is quite simple. In cobalt, for example, transforming from one phase to another requires just a uniform shear across what we call the invariant plane.
An invariant plane. What exactly does that mean for the atoms?
It means there's a specific foundational plane of atoms within the metal that does not stretch, does not compress, and does not rotate during the transformation.
It just stays put.
It remains structurally completely unchanged and invariant, acting as a geometric anchor, while the rest of the atoms shear uniformly past it. It's relatively clean. But when we look at iron, things get violently chaotic.
Right, because iron undergoes something called the Bain strain. When iron transforms from austenite into martensite, it doesn't just slide neatly past an anchor.
No. In the Bain strain, the marching band isn't just taking a step to the left. Imagine the football field itself is actively shrinking vertically and expanding horizontally.
Like the ground itself is changing.
Exactly. The atomic lattice undergoes a massive compression along the vertical z-axis and a simultaneous severe expansion along the horizontal x and y-axis.
So the atomic structure is being squashed from the top and stretched from the sides all at once. That sounds like a recipe for the metal completely tearing itself apart.
It absolutely is. The Bain strain generates basically intolerable macroscopic strains. If the metal just sat there and took that geometric squashing, it would physically rupture.
So how does it survive?
To survive this massive structural change without breaking apart, the newly forming martensite actually must deliberately deform itself microscopically.
Wait, it has to break itself to save itself?
Essentially, yes. It has to undergo internal slipping, or that mechanical transformation twinning we talked about earlier. By combining the immense macroscopic pressure of the Bain strain with millions of tiny microscopic shears, the metal cancels out the catastrophic tension. It locks the new martensite structure into place.
And that perfectly locked-in, coordinated shear isn't just a microscopic survival tactic. It is the exact mechanism that gives certain metal alloys a seemingly supernatural ability.
The shape memory effect.
Yes. This is where the strict rules of diffusionless movement pay off.
This is definitely the payoff.
So let's break down how shape memory works in the real world. Step one is cooling. You take a metal alloy in its parent phase, austenite, and you cool it down. As it cools, it undergoes that displacive transformation into martensite. But it forms many different microscopic variants, all pointing in slightly different directions.
Right. And because they point in different directions, the microscopic shifts cancel each other out. So to your naked eye, looking at it on the table, the chunk of metal hasn't changed its overall shape at all.
Okay, so step two. Deforming. You take that cold piece of metal and you bend it. You apply external stress. What is happening to those variants inside?
When you apply stress, you are forcefully favoring one specific variant of the martensite over the others. The variant whose atomic orientation naturally aligns with the direction you are bending it begins to rapidly grow and consume the other variants.
So the metal physically yields, and its macroscopic shape visibly bends.
Yes.
And now for the magical part, step three, heating. You take this physically deformed, bent piece of metal and you simply heat it up.
And because no atom ever traded places with its neighbor, because it was a perfectly diffusionless lockstep march, the atomic geometry is still perfectly mapped out.
Right.
As heat is applied, the thermodynamic balance shifts back. The martensite executes the exact reverse march back into austenite, perfectly regaining its original geometric shape.
So what does this all mean for you? Think about a crumpled up piece of paper. Imagine tightly crushing it into a ball, setting it on a table, and just pointing a warm hairdryer at it.
That would be wild to see.
Suddenly, the paper magically unfolds itself, flattening out into a pristine sheet entirely on its own. That is what a shape memory stent does inside a human artery when it warms up to body temperature.
It remembers.
It's an incredible application of the science.
It really is. But I admit, I am confused by one thing. If this lockstep mechanism is so geometrically flawless, why doesn't it last forever? Why can't I just crush it, heat it, and crush it again a million times?
This raises an important question, and it's the barrier between mathematical theory and physical reality. In a perfect mathematical model, yes, it lasts forever.
But not in the real world.
No. In the physical world, applying massive stress introduces permanent damage. Every time you sucker a shape memory alloy, crushing it and heating it, you are pushing millions of atoms right to the absolute limit of their elastic bounds.
So eventually, somebody in the marching band actually trips.
Exactly. You bend it just a fraction too far, and an atom slips out of rank permanently. We call this a dislocation.
A dislocation.
Yeah, it's a permanent microscopic traffic jam in the lattice. Once an atom permanently breaks its geometric relationship, the reverse transformation can't proceed flawlessly anymore. That specific tiny piece of the metal's memory is gone forever. The strain becomes irreversible.
Wow. Okay, to wrap up our journey today, we've looked into the mirror world of twinned grains, where atoms either accidentally perfectly reflect themselves during peaceful growth or violently shear at the speed of sound to survive a crushing blow.
Yeah.
We've seen how atoms march in perfect diffusionless lockstep to survive the crushing pressure of the Bain strain. And we discovered how that precise microscopic architecture allows metal alloys to remember their original forms until the trauma of repeated bending permanently erases that memory.
It fundamentally changes how you view the materials around us. I mean, understanding these microscopic shears and growth accidents allows engineers to manipulate solid state phase changes.
Which is huge.
It's how we design creep-resistant turbine blades for power plants. And precisely calibrated shape memory medical devices like those stents you mentioned.
It is profound. And it leaves me with a final thought to leave you with today, building on that idea of irreversible memory loss. The texts are clear that a metal loses its shape memory through repeated cycling that introduces permanent microscopic defects.
Right.
Think about an engineered piece of metal in an airplane or a power turbine. If it slowly accumulates irreversible microscopic defects, tiny growth accidents, and tiny slipped atoms every single time it experiences stress and heat, I mean, at what point does it stop being its original self?
It's basically a metallic ship of Theseus.
Yes. How many cycles of physical trauma and thermal memory can a material endure before its original atomic identity is so littered with dislocations that it is permanently overwritten by its own history?
The atomic lattice never forgets until the environment forces it to break rank.
Something to mull over the next time you carelessly bend a paperclip. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We highly encourage you to look a little closer with the metal objects around you today, because inside that seemingly lifeless steel or copper, billions of atoms might just be waiting for the exact right temperature to remember who they are.